cancer is a word that we don't like to hear too much for one reason or another. And most, if not all of us, know someone who has had cancer or has cancer. Now, during the week, we went to meet James. And here's James' story, and it's living with cancer.
Okay, James, thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us today. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, howdy, Joe. My name is James. I'm 48 years old. I have two daughters. I have a wife of 1 month. We got married after 12 years.
Right.
And I have two stepsons. And I come from a big family. I have five sisters, mother and father still alive. They're either touching 80s and nearly touching 90s. Five sisters, I'd say, and I've one brother.
Mm-hmm.
And a big group of friends.
And you worked as
an electrician.
How long were you at that for?
I worked for a company for maybe 20 years. And then I went out self-employed for maybe 10 years after that.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a few jobs in between.
And did you enjoy being self-employed, or...?
It was a struggle. I liked the freedom. I liked the being your own boss thing and all that. But it's the other side is the pricing jobs and getting money and all that, which I'm a man on my tools, not a man for the office.
I understand where you're coming from and that. And I suppose, too, like... Did you ever feel like, I'd like to take a day off today, but I work for myself and I can't? Where if you were working for an employer?
Yeah. And sometimes you're sitting there looking at the phone, come on, ring, you know, nothing happening today.
Yeah.
But you want to go to work, but there's nothing there.
So. There's nothing there.
It has its ups and its downs.
It's ups and its downs, yeah. You were saying there, you after 12 years, you got married to your partner.
Yep.
Yeah, how did you meet your partner?
We met in a pub in Edenmore, and I was going home and she was passing in a taxi with her friend. They were leaving at the same time, and they asked me back to a party.
Oh, right.
So I had a Chinese meal for one on my way home. So I said, ah, sure, why not? I'll give it a go.
And you went to the party?
Went to the party.
Did you have to share the Chinese meal?
Everybody looked at the food.
Yeah. He has no drink, but he has food.
He has food.
Very good, yeah. Yeah. So, and that's how you met your partner. And so who fell for who first?
Well, obviously she fell for me first.
Oh, my God, Jenny Mac. Okay.
I had to chase her a bit.
You had to do a bit of chasing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it was worth it.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me anyway... You're living a normal life, you're working, going out, doing normal things, and I suppose cancer wasn't a word that would be top of your conversation or thoughts. Then one Saturday morning, you were in your van, you're just outside Eddie's Coal Yard, just up from Donnymead Shopping Centre. What happens to you?
I was actually bringing my daughter to work. She works in Dunn's, in the pavilions, so I dropped her out that morning. Coming back, I stopped to get petrol, diesel. On the back roads, I drove on home, and I got to the lights at his schoolyard, and a car ran into the back of me. And those cars in front of me, I didn't hit anybody else, just the car plowed in the back of me.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely Saturday morning, people walking into the park, and plenty of people around. So I got out of the van, went to see what was up the damage. And when I got to the back of the van, the guy in the car was sitting there with his hand in the air. There was about a foot distance between the car and the van. So we started checking the doors were opening and not broken and trying to open them. So I have glass in the back of the doors. So I looked through into the front and his mate or his...
Someone else
that was with him. Well, I walked down the side of the van, he walked up the other side of the van and jumped into the driver's seat in across from the passenger seat through, and he started taking off in the van.
Mm-hmm.
So I panicked. I didn't know what was happening. I had lots of tools in the back of the van, so I pulled the doors open because they were kind of jammed.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled the doors open to grab, start pulling tools out of the van. The guy who was driving the van was a brutal driver. He drove straight. He didn't, there was a car in front of him, so he couldn't lock it to get out. So he'd gone back and forward as I'm pulling the stuff out of the van. I was thinking about jumping into the van, but I think that's going to kidnap myself.
Yeah.
That was a bad idea. So I'm dragging all the tools out onto the floor of the road. And with him going forward and backwards, and the other guy in the car, he started to try pushing me away from the tools, and he kind of jammed me up a little bit. I wasn't crushed, but I had the toolbox in my hand, and I'd have to swing around, I had to pick it up high to throw it at him or just get rid of it. And I got an awful sensation in my chest.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, from the rear end and down that, I don't know what. But I got a pain right in my chest there and then. So I dropped the toolbox, couldn't pull it up anymore. So the van sped off, doing a big U-turn outside of Eddie's Goulard, and headed at high speed. The doors flowing open, things falling out. And he head off up towards the back roads of the airport. And the little car that caused all the damage, the first guy, he'd done a big screech and away up the road he went. Mm-hmm. So the two of them went. And I'm standing there in the middle of the road, bits and pieces of tools and stuff on the ground, and it was a lovely sunny day, and the cars all behind me, I just looked at them and I said, what do I do? What's that happening there?
What's going on here?
A guy came over from the park, he was 6 foot away from me, and he says to me, he says, are you making a film? He thought, because Love Hate was on at the time, he thought it was it.
Yeah.
I says, no, this is meant to be hijacked. So I rang the police straight away. The police asked me, was I okay? I said, yeah. He says, do you need an ambulance? I said, no. He said, well, stay there and we'll reach you as quick as we can. And they got, this is gonna just go straight and catch this guy. So apparently they had a car up in the airport, the police said, and a car at IKEA. They know that this is probably a common occurrence. They knew exactly where the van was gonna go. They went up to, I think it's back to Torbury or something like that, so up in the back roads, maybe.
Yeah.
And the cops passed them by. The two guys sussed out they were done.
Yeah.
So they just dumped the van and ran across the field.
Mm-hmm.
Never to be seen again.
Did they leave their own car there as well?
No. Sorry, I don't know. Okay. The guy who was driving across the field, I don't know exactly where he went. Yeah. Saying is, the van was dumped, that's all I
know. That's all, yeah.
The boys were gone.
Yeah.
The cops are there all in seconds. Mm-hmm. I got a phone call within about 20 minutes to say, we had your van, it looks like all the tools in it.
Right.
So I got my van back, keys, because the keys, the house, everything, that's all I wanted back. I just wanted me and a few bits of tools.
Mm-hmm.
So, grand, that was the story with the van. So the next day, I had to go to the doctor. I thought muscles in my chest, and obviously thought the neck and all that, thought was all
you, you pulled a muscle or something,
So I went to the doctor. Doctor didn't like it, what he's seeing, this kind of a lump on my chest. And I was sent to Beaumont for a physio to look at it or something like that, blah, blah. Got to Beaumont, they didn't really like it. So they put me into the system of, they're not happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to touch it. So we want to, they done there for the investigation.
Yeah.
That was in January.
Mm-hmm.
We'll fast track it then to August. In between that, I had to get MRIs, I had to get x-rays and blah, blah. But the last one was an MRI, a fairly serious one. I had to go in, it was on the 5th of August, 2016, I think it was. And I went up at 10 o'clock in the morning, this is all by appointment, and you had to get a dye put into you, a radiation dye. You have to go off then for a couple of hours, and then you have to come back and get the MRI. So I done all that and went back. So you're sat in the machine, and the guy tells you, this machine is going to go up and down and take photographs. He says it roughly takes about 40 minutes. So he says, and if we have to go back again, he said we have to go back again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm lying there, took the 40 minutes. I'm looking at, there's monitors, you can see all different monitors, you know, your skeleton, that size, this size, that blah. But the machine was up around my chest. But then it went down towards me groin, and he was concentrating, and I could see the guy through the window.
Yeah.
And I pointed at him up here, you know, and yes. he just told me, shush, shush, leave it.
Yeah.
So he was down around me groin, and then I said, what's the cell about? So anyway, that was done. Going home, that was at about 3:30, 4:00.
Mm-hmm.
Friday evening, I keep saying this because I called my brother and we were just about to say, we'll walk over and have a pint,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he was all on for it. And I got a phone call from Bournemouth Hospital, asked me, would I go back up? The professor wanted to see me.
Yeah.
So I said to the girl, I said, this is how I know I really don't drink. I says to the girl, would it be okay if I go up in the morning?
Mm.
And yeah. She says, Mr. Curtis, I'm advising you. I says, oh, sorry, I says, I'm only joking. I said, I'll be up in 5 minutes. So I went up and met my sister up there. And so when I went into the A&E, the girl says, I said my name, and she looked a bit okay, really
yeah,
quick.
Yeah.
So that was grand. And then the doctor came out. He's, I don't know, I wouldn't say he was a doctor, I'd say he was a junior doctor. So he brought me into a room, my sister, myself, and Mary didn't come with me that day because she was going out to pick up a car.
Right.
She was getting a new car, well, a three-year-old car, it's new to us.
Yeah.
And so she's out getting the car. She wasn't expecting any of this, nobody was expecting nothing.
I gathered that because on our little meeting there the other day before we've come up today, going over the notes, I thought that to myself.
Mm.
Your partner obviously didn't expect
no,
that.
Nobody did.
Yeah.
Me especially.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Of course, you know. yeah. And there's a, if we can just say, there was a bit, you were saying to me there was a bit of a joke about the car.
No, she was joking. No, she was saying, no.
You'll be fine. I'm going to get the car.
Yeah, we had, that was afterwards. Like, yeah. You know, says, yeah. So she's outdoors, picking up a new car. This is 4:30, 5:00 on a Friday evening.
Mm-hmm.
And she's rushing to change her car because she was at the changing over at Jordan's.
Yeah.
You know, so mm-hmm. if she didn't get the car, she wasn't insured in her own car. So it was all gone.
Yes.
Hayward. So anyway, she has a car, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
So that's why she wasn't with me in the hospital.
Yes.
My sister was with me. So so I was brought into a room by a kind of a junior doctor. A nice lad, but I'd say he wouldn't have been the best man to give anybody bad news. So we went to the room and he just says he has to explain to me that they're after finding cancer in that scan that they'd done that morning. So I said, okay, that's fair enough. You know, lots of people have cancer. My sister, she'd be more medically, and she was kind of crying. She knows about what stuff like that, and she was kind of teary-eyed. So I asked him, I says, well, what exactly are we talking here? He was nearly crying. I says, what exactly are we talking here? Like, should I go home and get my affairs in order? And he says, if I was you, I would.
Right.
And that was a big bolt of lightning.
That is.
Yeah, because everything, you think of everything then, like, you know.
Of course, yeah.
You think about Mary, you think about my two daughters, you think about everyone, the family, you know.
Yeah.
And then you think, am I ever here or what?
Yeah, right. How long?
Yeah, what are we talking here? So, says, keep on saying, it's a Friday evening, so they said they had a bed for me there straight away, okay?
Mm.
So, it was a shock. I drove up in my van. I said, my van's outside, I have to get it home.
Mm-hmm.
Your man, and he says, well, just go and bring it home and come back up. So my sister said, it's Friday evening, is anybody going to see him over the weekend?
Yeah.
So we went upstairs to where I was meant to go, and my sister asked the head nurse up there, says, like, what is going to happen here? Like, is that getting bad news? Is he going to sit up here all weekend on his own? Or, you know, my sister asked, he would be kind of better off, can you come back Monday morning, can you digest this over the weekend?
Yeah.
And she did say, yeah. But she says, if an emergency comes in that bed, your bed's gone.
Right.
But I was willing to take the chance because the news I was just at the end. I didn't want to sit in hospital for the weekend.
Absolutely, yeah.
With seeing nobody, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I went home for the weekend. I went straight to my mother's. By the time I got to my mother's, as I said, a big family, most of them were there. They were spread, like wildfire, and we all met in my mum's house.
Mm.
So when I got there, my two daughters where one was in school, I think, and one was in work. And Mary picked up my eldest daughter in work because she works outside, so she picked up the car. Didn't tell her anything.
Yeah.
I told Mary over the sorry. I rang Mary and told her while I was driving home, and I told her not to be diagnosed with cancer. Obviously, I was shocked. I didn't cry or anything. I wouldn't think about it. So she just says, "Right, I'll meet you in your mother's."
Mm-hmm.
So, my daughter, I said, "Would you pick up Kerry and bring her?"
Yeah.
And my other sister got my other daughter, Aoife. And so everybody met in my mother's, basically speaking. So I was in my mother's about half an hour before they came along. And we were all having it. A yap, you know, and whatever. Trying to diagnose this.
Yeah, you had told the family before your daughters arrived.
Yeah. So when my daughters arrived to have let's say, and Mary, my family, we sat in the room, and we had a bit of a 2 minute. The daughters were crying, and you know, Mary's crying, and I was teary eyed, but it wasn't. You know, I was just crying because I was looking at them crying.
You didn't want to have them upset.
Yeah.
You were upset because they were upset.
Yeah. And a niece of mine, who's, she's about, I don't know what her whole thing, about 30, but she had cancer. And she has two young kids. And she had a lymph node cancer, so, and she's doing great. So I just said to the girls, I said, look, your cousin is doing this.
Yeah.
And she's okay, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
So basically speaking, that was telling the girls in my mother's house and telling everybody, and then we were all then back to everyone together, and my mother took a bottle of whiskey, and we decided we'd have a whiskey to calm the nerves. Mm-hmm. And I just told my mother that things could be worse, and she says, "How?" Well, I says, "Well, it could be John that had it. It's my older brother.
Yeah.
Number one, so, as a joke, a family joke.
The blue eyed boy.
Yeah. So we all had a bit of a laugh about that, you know.
Yeah.
And just trying to turn around and try
breaking the ice kind of type thing, yeah.
Now, as I said, all my sisters, they'd be all into research.
Mm-hmm.
So already they were researching.
Do you think that's a good thing?
It's good for them, it's not good for me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a researcher, but it's good for them. Yeah. I mean, because they feel helpless.
They want to be looking for positive.
Yeah. You know, so it was all very good. It was all very positive. A lot of people around me, you know, lots of people around me.
Yeah.
And that's a huge help, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my own, then thinking, okay, it's just another challenge. It's he didn't tell me, you know, I mean, you've got that amount of time. He didn't really tell me anything. He saw me.
Yeah.
He didn't tell me anything. But I just said to myself, right, we'll take this day by day now.
Yeah.
You know, so that's basically what
that's,
it is.
But I'm sure when he told you to get your affairs in order,
yeah.
I mean, a normal person would think, oh God, am I looking at months here or what's the story? It's just a fair old shock to the system to be told that.
Yeah. It was, but like, what could I do about it? If that's what had to happen, that's what had to happen.
Yeah.
I know that sounds bump. I don't think I was, maybe I wasn't thinking right.
Yeah.
I didn't probably sink in. I don't know. It didn't kick me the way, you know, you say someone will get your fair in order. Yeah, you think. I don't know what I probably just wasn't thinking straight.
Yeah.
Didn't really
But you
hear.
Seem to have, you seem to have a positive, you put on your positive hat, if I can put it to you that way.
Yeah.
Would I be right in saying that in a way?
Yeah. And that's not on me all the time. I have speed wobbles every now and again. But basically, is you have to look on the bright side of it. If you have to look into the future. That was a hard thing at the start to do. You have to look into the future.
Yeah.
Like your future stops. You don't want to make a plan for next week because you think I might not be here next week.
Mm.
And then that lasts only a little while. With me, it didn't anyway. And then it was just go future. Think what's going to happen next. What can they do for me? How can I get better? You know what I mean? What's coming up in life? You know, an 18th party for your daughter or 24th or something like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
all them things, you know. You know,
yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah. What we're going to do is we're just going to take a little break and we'll be back with you in about 2 minutes. That's okay.
Text 087 69 44 500.
90.3. Near FM.
This is Off the Shelf, your weekend magazine on the radio with Joe Byrne.
Yes, indeed, you are tuned to Near FM online and on 90.3. Good morning if you're just joining, and welcome if this is your first time to tune in. We continue on now with James's story.
Okay, James, so you're diagnosed with a cancer. You're told, get your affairs in order. Where does it go from there?
Well, that particular time, as I said, is I asked the nurse, could I come back on the Monday? Which I was blessed, and I did. So I had a weekend at home to think about things. And we, as in myself, Mary, the kids, the family, we everybody talked over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Lots of friends called around, and that you haven't seen in ages and all that, because the world's blah, blah. So I went back up on Monday to Beaumont Hospital, and in I went. So I had to get a lot of tests. So I was then told it was it's a kidney cancer, of cancer of the kidney. So, and it had spread through my bones up to my sternum, which is your chest bone. So I was under a guy, Professor Grogan, brilliant man up in Beaumont. I was put under his care. So I don't know how it all works, but I think he's the main man. So they have a team. So they decide which way we would treat. So, chemotherapy, radiation, or drugs of some sort. So, basically, by the time, this all took maybe 2 or 3 weeks, I think. But the decision was made by Professor Grogan to, first off, get rid of the kidney. So, I had to go in and get the kidney removed. That took about 4 to 5 days in the hospital. In and out, perfect procedure. There was a big mass of cancer in the kidney, so they just took it all out and got rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
If that was the only problem, I would have been back working, I'd say, 2 months later, because it was easy. But it spread up to me chest bone, and it's kind of like half an egg shape on my chest bone now, and that's where the cancer is.
Mm.
So this is called stage 4 cancer. So, I started attending regular visits after the kidney had gone, and I was put on a drug treatment then. So, I was put on a drug, I can't remember the names, but one of the first drugs I was put on really knocked me out. The side effects were horrendous. Ulcers in your mouth, skin went yellow. I was losing weight rapid. I was totally fatigued. I went up to Professor Grogan, and he looked at me after a certain time. Okay, he said, we're taking you off that, and we're going to put you on something else. So I was frightened, because I said to myself, maybe this was the best one, and it's not agreeing with me, and they're just going to put me on a little, something small just to keep me going or whatever. But it wasn't the case. It was just Sudent was the name of that first one. So I got off this Sudent, and he put me on this other drug, which I can't think of the name of now. So I was more suitable for that drug. So I'm at to be 2.5 years on that drug.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 2.5 years, I've had a good standard of life. I haven't worked since maybe 2.5 years, but mm-hmm. I've tried to go back to work, but the energy isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So although they have me on this drug, I can tip around no problem, but I wouldn't be able to do too much physical work.
You have good days, bad days.
I have great days, everything's cool, the gang, you could get up and you can clean the house from top to bottom, let's say. That's just sort of an analogy. And then there's other days where you get up out of bed and you can't lift a dish out of the dishwasher because you're so tired.
Yeah.
And you don't know until you wake up what day that is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really plan. Okay, as I say, you can't really plan. You can't really plan any. You can plan, but you can't plan anything mad. Like, you wouldn't be planning a mountain hike.
Yeah, you wouldn't be planning to go off camping or
camping.
Trekking up
hill. No. In your good day, you probably would be not trekking up hill. You'd be able to do a bit of camping.
Yeah.
You know, on a good day, it's great. You know, sit out in the back garden, have a barbecue.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Just keep yourself out of the sun. You know what I mean? Plenty of factor. And
is that something that you have to do?
Well, I do it now. I was. I'm not sure whether she treated me nurse up in the moment. She's brilliant. I'm not sure whether she actually told me to stay out of the sun. I'm sure she did. Mm-hmm. She told everyone. But it's a factor 50 job. My skin's gone white with the tablets I'm on, and my hair went black to grey overnight.
Yeah.
But I can rock the grey, so I don't mind.
There's nothing wrong with grey hair.
No, Joe. Yeah, you know? It suits you as well. Yeah. No, the grey hair doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
People who lose their hair, I don't know whether that would bother me, but I can't say whether it would because I don't know because I haven't.
Yeah.
So, but physically, whereas the only thing is the grey hair. Now, I can walk by people in the street and they don't recognise me.
Yes.
The difference of it, you know.
Yeah.
And then myself and my brother were in having a pint one day, and a guy came up, a guy we know 20 years, and he came up and says to my brother John, he says, we're sitting there together, and he says, "How's James?" And John looked at him and says, "Ask me yourself." You know,
that's how much you've changed.
Yeah. You know, he could come up to me and no one recognised me.
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
Yeah. Right.
That has its advantages.
Especially anybody you might owe money to.
Yeah, exactly.
When or something like that. Yeah. You went through, you don't remember me asking this, you did go through a bit of a rough time, you were telling me, during the slump. You know, you were a fighter.
Yeah. Well, as I said, maybe everything kind of happens for a reason, and maybe all those little reasons you get in life are preparing you for the big one, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Like I went through self-employing it, getting made redundant.
Yeah.
Having to think because big mortgage on the house back in the day. I was Rockefeller and blah blah blah. The bank gave me the money and I was stupid enough to take it. So, but it has to be paid back. So you're always thinking. So then I self-employed, get that 10 years. It was stupid timing to be self-employed. It was stupid. There was no work.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I had to do other things during them 10 years as well as the being an electrician. I drove a taxi. I rented a taxi off Mattress Mick. Lovely man. Went one off him for the year. I done a few other little jobs, delivering curries, Chinese things, kind of like that. You know, I'm handy with the old hands, so I done any odd jobs that people needed done.
Well, these were all things you had to do to keep the roof over your head and keep the bank
open. Yeah, but when I was doing that, I was healthy.
Yeah.
And I wasn't thinking about dying of cancer or nothing. It was just, you know, you have to live. I have to have my money for my mortgage.
Well, you weren't aware of...
No, I wasn't thinking about it. No. Now, maybe some people say it's very stressful. You know, the bank ringing you, wanting to know what the story is with the house and all that type of jazz. And So I struck a deal with them. Well, I didn't. New Beginnings helping. So I got a deal in the house. So basically speaking, I can afford the house as in for whatever time.
Yeah.
But so I had my home secured.
Mm-hmm.
But that was all that I was doing that when I hadn't got cancer.
Yes.
Okay. And I was able to fight that fight. So, but it was a fight, you know. And it was pressure and it's stress and it's and then everything. So basically speaking, you're always kind of fighting against something, so you know.
The stress that you were under and then the incident with the van that brought on the cancer or what?
No, I've bandied that around, but basically speaking, I asked Professor Grogan, And he said, it's just a rogue cell.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I was looking for answers that he didn't have, because nobody knows. Did stress bring her on? And he said, no. He says, it's nothing to do with your diet. It's nothing to do with your sheep, your this. It's not stress. He says, it's just one of those things.
Nothing to do with the accident.
Nothing to do with the start of the cancer. He said the cancer could have been there in 10 years. And I didn't know. Could be there two months. He said, no. He said, but it was a fairly big lump of cancer.
Okay.
So you couldn't put a date on it or anything.
Yeah.
Like, and I probably walking around, let's say not 10 years, maybe 5 years with a lump of cancer in me that I didn't know.
You didn't know.
And if I had found out, kidney would have been gone and that would have been the end of it.
Right.
But because of getting the bump in the van, appeared in my chest.
Yes.
So I investigated it. That started the ball rolling.
Yeah. The bump in the van activated the cancer.
I'm not sure whether it activated the cancer. I honestly don't know. To me, that's when it all came to get something looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And only for that.
Mm-hmm.
If I hadn't have had that lump on my chest by twisting and turning and getting banged and all that, I wouldn't have known that I had cancer, basically speaking.
Yeah.
So if I had known, let's say 3 years before that, a problem, cancer in my kidney, just take the kidney out, throw it away, everything was hunky-dory, it wouldn't be stage four, it wouldn't have gone anywhere.
Yes.
So basically speaking, the bump in the van, as we call it, that triggered it triggered a chain of events.
Yes.
So basically speaking, them guys kind of done me a favour, but I don't think they did.
They don't think they did,
They weren't doing it out of goodness, but as religious people say, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. How often would you attend Beaumont?
It depends. It was, at the start, it was every week. And then it goes to 2 weeks, and then it goes to a month.
Mm-hmm.
You go up, you get your bloods done. They check you that, basically speaking, that the rest of your body is still taking over while you're on these drugs. Mm. They're monitoring you.
Yeah.
You know? And the place just be packed up there, but they're brilliant up there, and they try to keep everybody going, moving as fast as you can.
Yeah.
You know, and but if you have a problem, let's say, in between, let's say you're every 2 weeks, if you have a problem in between, there's a phone number to ring.
Mm.
You know? So they're always there. And if you feel like your blood pressure's going up through the roof or something, you may ring them and talk to Teresa, and Teresa will tell you what to do. She might say, the phone, do something, or else get up and see me. You know what I mean? And you say, I don't think it's that bad. And she say, get up and see me. Just, I want to look at you, not you look at me.
Yeah.
You know? So you have to just do what you're told. You know, and I'd be a man to say, I'm grand.
Right.
Nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
And that note, I have to say, is every time every 3 months you get a scan. Okay, so you get a scan, let's say, on a Thursday, and you're back in Beaumont with Professor Grogan. He has a look at it on the Tuesday, the next following Tuesday. So then, every 3 months, Mary comes with me to about the scans, because he might tell you something and you mightn't hear it, so you need somebody with you.
You hear blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know? So Mary comes with me, and Mary's always slagging me because Professor Grogan say, you know, how are you feeling? I'm grand. And Mary say, no, he's not. You know what I mean? He didn't sleep last night.
Yeah.
You know? And then I'd say, in general, I'm grand.
Yes.
Yeah. And he loves hearing I'm grand, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then he did say to Mary, he looks at Mary now. He doesn't even ask me, how are you? No, that's not Mary, because I won't tell the truth. You know? It's just one of those things. I just want to get out.
In case he has something to tell you.
Yeah.
You were telling me there the other day that you get to meet people when you're going in for the treatment, and obviously you make friends, and sometimes things happen.
Yeah. Let's say I'm going up there now 2.5 years, 3 years, and you're just sitting in the room. There's 40 people in the room. They're all in for the same reason, and all different ages. And you're there for a couple of hours, so an hour or two, or maybe three, whatever. So you just get yapping.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got yapping to a lot of people, and some of them are with us now. You know, it's obviously it's caught up on them. You know,
mm-hmm.
But when I met them, like, there'd be people from all over the country.
Yeah.
All of other countries as well, you know.
Mm.
And yeah, like you wouldn't, you just read about it or hear about it, or somebody would tell you, Johnny passed away or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So something that's a bit rough. What I'm saying is
that's the way it is, and
they go, oh, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a good few of them people. I actually knew a few of them personally before. I've met them up there. Now you've got cancer. I've got cancer. You know, all that, and then they've passed on.
Yeah.
You know, so it's tough.
Tough you know? Indeed. Tell me about Christy Dignam.
Christy Dignam. I don't. Aslan, the group. Yeah. Growing up, they're a band that you playing up in Keulock or wherever. You go see them, and good. You'd have a good night. But the thing I don't like about Aslan is the people that follow Aslan. If I'm there to see Christy Dignam, I want to listen to Christy Dignam singing.
Yeah.
How can I protect you? I don't want 20 yobos screaming it on this way. But anyway, that's the gig up there. That's with that, and that's part of that. I like listening to Aslan on a record or on radio or something like that, but that's the people around it are all, you know, let's say me with you two. You know what I mean? If I'm at a U2 concert, you're not going to hear Bono, you're going to hear me. You know?
Right.
So that's
right.
The thing about Christy Dignam.
Yeah.
But I was watching him on the TV, and by the way, my dad's 90 this week, and he loves Christy Dignam.
This weekend, is it?
This weekend, yeah. My dad's 90. Yeah.
Happy birthday, yeah. Dad.
And
what's his name? Do you want to tell us?
Johnny.
Happy birthday, Johnny.
Yes, he's 89.
Very good.
So, to get back to Christy Dignam, because my dad loves him. He was on the TV. I don't know which show it was. I was watching TV. But he was explaining his cancer, and he's obviously a songwriter and a poet or whatever, but he was very articulate. And I was sitting here on my own, and it was late night, and whatever he was saying, I said to myself, I should record this and hand it to my mother, because my mother's always asking, how are you, how are you feeling, you know, always, you know, mother or someone, you know. I said, so I did record it, podcast or whatever it was, I did. But I brought it up with my man. He says, there you go, watch that. And that man is saying everything that I feel. Okay? He's speaking, you know, because he can word it right. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I have a lot of respect for him. You know?
Yeah.
You know? I don't want to be a groupie or meet him or not. I've seen him up in the hospital and all that. I wouldn't be in his face.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying that as a person.
Yes.
He's a guy that can articulate and put it across better.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm thinking.
So every time you go down to your mum, she'll ask you how you keeping and all these questions,
all
and you just say, "That's how I feel.
That's
now.
How I feel.
That's it.
That's a good, you know, that's a good ballpark. Work off that, you know, because what he's saying there is basically that's what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then when you're in your mother's, they just want to feed you. You know,
right?
So,
yeah,
and
you could be the blue-eyed boy.
I probably am. It was a joke between me and my brother, my dad, and the whole lot. You know?
Yeah,
I'm my dad's son, and John's my mother's son.
Mother's
it's
brother.
Only a joke. You know, we're, come here, we're a very tight family, but I'm blessed with them.
That's good.
And five sisters, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
There's no favourites.
Right, and of course we go back to the fact that you recently got married.
Yep.
Yeah. Only that was a month.
A month ago,
yeah. And that day went well.
That went brilliant. Myself and Mary were at a wedding about a year ago or so. Mary's very creative, and she likes making stuff. Visual and merchandising
She's artistic, isn't she?
Artistic, yeah. Window dressing in stores and everything. She's brilliant. The house is lovely, you know, here, because of her. She picks out lovely colours, and if you stand still long enough in this house, you're going to get painted, okay? Okay, so every bit of clothing we have has a little bit of paint on.
So you're saying you could come into the house and Mary's after doing a bit of painting, and she might say, James, go upstairs and change your clothes. It doesn't go with the colour scheme.
It doesn't go with the colour scheme, yeah. Like, it's just, she's brilliant there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know where I was going with that. Where was he going? Was he?
Oh, we were talking. You were at a wedding.
Oh, the wedding. No, the wedding came up. We were at a wedding a year ago.
Yeah.
A friend of Mary's got married, and Mary helped him out with the wedding. and it was a good wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And the time of the year, it was beautiful, the time of the year. So anyway, I didn't ask Mary to marry me. I kind of told her we're getting married.
All right. Yeah. You know? That was romantic.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
Excuse me. I'm on a board.
Yeah. We're with each other 12 years.
So you know each other. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I was married before. So it was just something that it was, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was on the cards. So I said, no, I'm not saying the cancer made me get married or made a decision to. No, it's just the timing was right, you know.
Yeah.
You know, whether I had cancer or not, no, we still would have got married. Yeah,
would but, you just yeah. get to the crunch, James? Yeah. It was love.
Love. Firstly, love.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're together a month so far.
Yeah. And it's going well.
Sweet.
Yeah. And of course, as you said, you were married before, and so you have two daughters, and of course, Mary has two sons. So yeah.
25. 22, 19 and 18.
And
all we need is Alice, and then we're the Brady Bunch.
Alice, oh, okay.
Do you remember Brady Bunch?
I do, yeah.
Alice,
but
the housekeeper, Alice.
The housekeeper, yeah. Well, you could always get a cat or a dog.
We have a cat called Lucky.
Lucky, okay. Well, there you go. So you've got a family there as well.
Yep, and
they're, of course...
They all get on great.
All getting on great. And all involved in what's going on with yourself.
They're involved, but like, they have to live that life. So everybody's just going on pretty normal. Yeah. Keep me throwing around me when I have a bad day. And because I'm only human, I have bad days. And on good days, we have a great bit of crack. We'll have a dance off in the kitchen. Nathan's into the dancing, the break dancing, the paradigm. Gavin's a bit of a DJ as well. He's not a bit of a DJ, he's a very good DJ. So he'd put on the tunes, he'll have his friends around. You wouldn't know what would walk in the door, the clothes they wear. You know, he'd do the hip hop and they'd be all dancing in the kitchen. And on a good day, I'd start dancing with them. And then 10 minutes later, I'd be sitting on the couch saying, I shouldn't have done that.
Maybe you should stick to the lurches.
I just stop.
Right.
Just sit it out, we should. But when you're in good humour and you want to jump around a bit, jump around, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you're not in the humour, just don't, you know?
Yeah. Well, you said that when you came back from the hospital that time, your intention was to go around and have a pint. And she says, well, come back up. You've been to the pub anyway since then for your pints, as you say. And you're getting on with life.
Obviously, you can't drink too much. You know,
mm-hmm.
as much as you go out, but it's not about even the drink, it's well over and having a bit of a social life.
Mm.
You know, you have to keep that going. I drink with a big group of friends and Mary's dad and our poor brothers. We all drink in the same place.
Yeah.
And we have to have a bit of laugh, you know, and we just have a debate about whether Brexit or
whatever,
the state of the world.
Yeah,
and then all it takes is one person, and then there's a row, and then we're all fighting each other, and it's great. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And then at the end of it all, someone gets slagged, and then we all pick on that person.
That's what you like to do on Fair Play.
You can't drink too much now. You're not allowed to drink too much. You know?
Right.
You have to change your
many pints.
Oh, well, it depends. I'll say many, and you think that's much.
No. You see.
No. It depends on the.
My other half will say to me, "God, stop telling that." I went down to the doctor. About 5 years ago, I wasn't feeling the best, and he put me on some antibiotics. And when I asked him, "Can I have a drink with this?" His words to me were, "A man has to live."
Yeah.
So there you go. Anyway, he didn't mean that I could have about 6 or 7 pints.
Yeah.
I could only have 2. But the strange thing is that man is retired, and I had need to go back to the surgery there about a year ago, and it was a new person. And when they went on my chart, the first thing they said to me, "What does that mean on the top of your file? A man has to live." So I said, "Well, I didn't know that was there."
You wrote it
on the file. Excellent. "A man has to live."
Yeah.
So anything you want to finish off with saying to us?
No. I had a speed wobble there last week, as in with the cancer.
A speed wobble.
A speed wobble, I call it, sorry. Is in, I went up to get my scan last week, and the mass on the sternum has not got any bigger, but on the T1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on the spine, there's little black, so it appears to be cancer. So the mass isn't getting any bigger, but it's kind of, it's moved, spread, let's say. I'm not using that word spread, but there's more, okay? So that was last week. I had to get two MRIs done on the same day because Professor Grogan wasn't happy with what he was looking at. It was late in the evening when all the stuff came in. So he just says, go on home, come back in the morning. Let me have a think about it and we'll sort out something tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got to him the next day, Mary was with me all that day. Maybe I'd take some time off work. So she was with me there all that day and all the next day. So a new plan has come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan for me is get some 2 weeks of radiation and then start 2 weeks off everything and then start on a new procedure, which I forget the name of, and I probably wouldn't even say it because I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And I'd be only telling somebody I don't even know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I have an idea. They know what I'm doing. I have an idea what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm leaving it at that. I'm a man to leave it with the professionals.
Yeah.
Help yourself as much as you can. I'm all into the medical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are into healing power.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are into what's it called? The passion oils and all that.
Yeah.
Millions of people have said to me, get this and get that and get this and get that.
Mm-hmm.
So my opinion about that is I asked up in the hospital, and their opinion is there's no regulation on it, there's no investigations being done into it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not medically proven, so I'm not a man to go and do something that's not medically proven.
Right.
That's now, if they told me, listen James, you've only 3 months to live, I'd go out and I'd do anything, you know. If it wasn't medically proven, it wouldn't matter, because you've only 3 months.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can appreciate people that are doing it and it's working for other things, like other than cancer. But it's the people that you meet that haven't got cancer and tell you about this cannabis oil and it's brilliant. And this person you've met in the street, you know, they might sell ice pops for a living.
Yes.
You know, for all I know.
Yeah.
And they're telling me that cannabis oil is great.
Yeah.
And they haven't got cancer.
Mm-hmm.
They heard about two stories down the road that someone had, and it's gone. The cancer's gone after, you know.
Mm.
But that does me head in a bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Are you a religious man in any way?
I have my own religion, as in, I'm not saying I'm a cult. No, I have my own way of thinking.
Right.
Okay, I pray to God. I believe in God. I'm a Catholic. And so I do pray. I don't go to Mass every Sunday. You know, I've often popped in. If I'd be walking through the city centre, I'd pop into a church, you know, just to say a prayer, you know. Light a candle, that stuff. I wouldn't march everyone down on a Sunday morning. That's, you know, we have to be in Mass at 10 o'clock. That's not my gig.
Mm.
But yeah, I'd be a religious man, yeah. And I do believe that. For me, is there's something after this, so don't be panicking too much. You know, don't be panicking that death is the end of it, because for me it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have their own opinion, and I wouldn't even talk to people about it, because it's your own opinion. Do what you want. I don't care, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All I care about what I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, and I don't want people telling me, it's a load of crap, it's a load of crap. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I think. And it's not up for discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But basically speaking, religious, yes.
Right. Yes. Well, we might leave it there at that, if that's okay with you.
Yep, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope you got enough out of me.
We yes indeed. And thanks for allowing us to come up and talk to you, and we'll keep in touch with you. And we hope, I'm sure everything will go fine for you.
Thanks very much. It's great to talk yesterday and talking yesterday and today. I haven't talked really about it, and you know, as it goes on, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you called over.
Yeah.
We've done this.
You've done that. Yeah. Well, even your notes that you took yesterday.
Yeah.
That was...
Yeah, it made me teary-eyed at the time.
It did indeed, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's come here, don't, I would be afraid to cry. When you need to cry, cry, because if you hold it back, it's gonna hurt you.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
James, thanks very much.
No problem, Joe.
Take care.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
And that was James Curtis telling his story about living with cancer.